Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a great episode for you today. We're going to wrap up both of the conference finals, preview the NBA Finals, or the Warriors-Cavs grudge match. We'll also have some free agency and trade talk, and Mort might even hit us with a hot take or two along the way. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you all that you can follow us on Twitter, at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow there as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so we'd love it if you checked us out there, subscribed, downloaded, left some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Already had a bunch of good finals previews coming out, also some off-season previews rolling out, some NBA draft, which is coming up in a couple weeks, so check them out again, FanRag Sports. Joining me, as always, this week are my two trusty co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
It's going well, Brian.
Yeah, pretty good. So I think we're both melting. Morten says it's hot in Denmark. It's pretty hot.
Look,
here.
I'm practically naked as we record this. It's so warm.
That's true. I can vouch. We have a video screen going, so we can, yeah. We can see.
My apologies. That's, yeah. You'll have to burn your eyes out of that.
Mort also just got back from a screening of Wonder Woman, and he says it is actually good, unlike the other DC movies. So that's exciting.
Hey now. Oh, look, I get it. I get it. I'm not the right person to ask this. You know that.
Well, hopefully, I mean, American fans have to wait one more week, but it sounds like, for those who have been disappointed in Suicide Squad and Batman vs. Superman, it sounds like we actually might enjoy Wonder Woman. So
you should never ask me of these things. I named my son Bruce, for crying out loud.
the Batman tattoo on his shoulder can vouch, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start things off this week. Sarah, I'm sorry to start on a down note, but we got to talk about your Spurs and wrap up the Western Conference Finals. I mean, Zaza Pachulia is the MVP of that series because he hurt Kawhi Leonard, who then proceeded to miss games 2 through 4. Without Kawhi, without Tony Parker, the Spurs just couldn't keep up with the Warriors. So we'll talk about the Warriors when we preview the finals. Let's focus on your Spurs, because now they enter a pretty interesting offseason. Usually they're not huge free agent players, aside from LaMarcus Aldridge 2 years ago. You know, Pau Gasol was a kind of big splash last season, but now they're apparently in the running for Chris Paul, which we'll talk about later. Let's talk about the point guard spot first, because Tony Parker tore his quad tendon. It sounds like they're not sure whether he's going to be ready for the start of the 2017-2018 season. They have Patty Mills, who is a free agent. They have DeJounte Murray, who is a rookie who showed some promising flashes, but do you think he's ready to take over as the full-time point guard while Tony's out? Do they need to re-sign Patty Mills, or are you looking elsewhere for the point guard spot until Tony's back?
Well, first of all, I'm going to be the insufferable Spurs fan for the rest of the summer. I just wanted to let y'all know.
Good.
Because I'm on my Kanye West can't tell me nothing, because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, my Spurs in 6 was going to come true until Zaza mangled Kawhi. So, and I can't prove that it would have, but you can't prove that it would not have. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Other than that, as far as our point guard situation, it's not an ideal situation to be in, obviously. Although I think we have significantly more reason to be hopeful and excited about the future than we had the last few summers. I don't think DeJounte's quite ready. Obviously, you know, this year he wasn't ready yet. He's got a few months over the summer. We'll see what kind of progress he makes. But ideally, you'd like to have somebody else there to kind of help. Patty Mills, as we kind of saw, was forced into a role that wasn't really his role there towards the end of the playoffs. And I actually wanted to know what you thought about that, Brian, because you kept saying, let's play Patty more minutes, or do you think that's a good idea if Spurs meet the Warriors? We ended up being forced into that, and it did not go that well.
Right.
So what did you think about Patty as a starting point guard?
Yeah, that wasn't a glowing endorsement of this Patty Mills experiment. I think in the right situation, say a team where you could play a little more off ball, like right. say Philadelphia, he might right. be he might be a better fit. But it was not. You know, I would be nervous if he was the starting point guard going into next season, unless yeah. Tony was, you know, coming back within the first couple weeks of the year, and it's really a stopgap thing. But if Tony's out for the first 2 months, I'm with you. I think you might need to go venture out in the free agent point guard market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it. I love me some Patty Mills, but. That's what we need to replace is not really what he does. Like you said, he's really great off ball. He's really great off the bench. Could possibly be somewhat successful for a short time, like you said, in the regular season. But, yeah, he's not as much of a pick-and-pop player. He did do that a little bit this year. He's not much of a penetrator. And that's what we would need. So, like I said, I don't really want to go too far out. Hope maybe they can sign somebody, but I don't think we need a big free agent splash at that position. Mm. And I do want to see how DeJounte does, but he's not quite ready, but sometimes that's for the best. I do want to see him. I think he is part of the future. So if we just need to get him out there and get him some more experience, I'm honestly fine with that.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, we've kind of alluded to this, but a big issue in the conference finals was, especially once Kawhi went down and once Tony was out, they just didn't have that many players who could create offense for others. So that, you know, that plays into Patty, but the one lone beacon of hope was Manu Ginobili, who may or may not be retiring. We don't know. I mean, Spurs fans gave him a very well-deserved standing ovation at the end of Game 4 when he came out. He said afterward, you know, he's going to take a couple weeks to kind of figure out what he wants to do next. So, Sarah, do you think that was Manu's last game, or do you think he comes back for one more season?
You know, it's been really strange because everyone who isn't Manu seems convinced that he's not coming back. Like that's, you just keep hearing it. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. And I've kind of gone back and forth. Obviously, I don't know. It's weird. I just hope that he doesn't feel like we're all kind of pushing him out the door. Like, that's not it at all. I'm glad we gave him that celebration and that love and that recognition. He has Tim to blame for it, kind of, because Tim kind of blindsided us last year, so we weren't going to let that happen again. Right. But, like, we will gladly do it again next year if you come back, Manu. we don't have any problem with that. We just wanted to make sure, just in case. I don't know. I mean, he started out the playoffs, obviously. What is it? We went, like, 4 games against the Grizzlies without even scoring. Right. Scary. I think we all felt like, okay, this might be it. But then he finished the playoffs really well, you know? Mm-hmm. So as it went on, I felt more and more like, okay, he could come back for another year. So I really don't know. I have no idea which way he's leaning, if anyway. I was going to say nobody knows but Manu, but I'm not sure that he even really knows right now. He just posted a picture today about, I think it said vacation mode on, and it's like his three boys in the river walking around. So I'm glad. I think he's just enjoying the moment. I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think, you know, we'll obviously keep track of that as we get closer to the summer. But hopefully, I think fans, not even of Spurs, just want to see Manu continue playing basketball. Because as you said, he did play well when, after that scary stint against the Grizzlies. Mort, I'm going to throw this one to you because I think we know where Sarah stands here. And Sarah, you could chime in as well. But you know, one of the big stories of the conference finals was once Kawhi went down, LaMarcus Aldridge needed to play a bigger role. And for whatever reason, he didn't seem suited to do that. He couldn't, you know, turn into a 30-point-per-game scorer. He just kind of hovered at his same amount of production, and it seemed to frustrate Greg Popovich, especially after Game 2, I think, was when he specifically called LaMarcus out during the press conference. So what do you think the Spurs should do with LaMarcus this summer? He's got 2 years left on his deal. The second year is a player option, so he could opt out after the 2017-18 year. Do you think they should shop him now?
Yes. Like, but what could you get? Sarah and I spoke about this some podcasts ago. I think it was the one where you weren't here. And And Sarah made an excellent point. Like, what can you get for LaMarcus right now? Everyone knows that he is inconsistent at this point in his career, because that's been the case throughout the entire course of the season. And last year, he didn't really like make a big splash with the Spurs either. He was, I think, 18-8 or something in that regard. It's not like mind-blowing numbers, and he just kind of took a back seat. Mm-hmm. And you said, you know, he didn't turn out to be like a 30-point scorer. Well, he didn't even turn out to be a 16-point scorer, like against Golden State. Like, that's really the major concern to me. Like, if he had just upped the offensive volume a little bit more, been a little bit more aggressive, he could even have settled for like 16, 18 points a game and just like grabbed double-digit rebounds. Mm-hmm. But he was less than 6 boards a game. Like, there was no justification in keeping on playing him, which is why Pop limited his minutes. Like, he played under 30 for the series because, you know, he just couldn't have him out there. Like, it was a better bet to go with Jonathan Simmons. Like, think about that for a second. Like, there you have this $20 million a year player in LaMarcus, and you go with the guy who paid $150 to right. turn out to, you know, the D-League tryouts. Yeah. In the NBA playoffs, no less. Yes, you shop him. And if you can get someone to take him for an expiring contract, mm-hmm. you do it, and then you go all in on 2018. That's really the best case scenario, because you're not going to get cap relief
right.
at all.
Right. Yeah. I'm stealing this from the guys who do NBA assets with me. Have been kind of throwing around ideas of how to get LaMarcus off the Spurs. And one of them suggested sending him to Boston if they strike out on, you know, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Gordon Hayward doesn't sign there. Something structured around Avery Bradley, and I don't know what else they would have to do to make it cap legal, but that frees up the guard logjam for Boston. LaMarcus, LaMarcus and Al Horford offensively seem like they could fit well. Defensively, we'll just leave it at that.
Damn, I don't even do that.
You would not?
I'm not even giving up Avery Bradley for LaMarcus at this point.
Wow.
Because of the question marks. Like, don't get mm-hmm. it twisted. LaMarcus is a fantastic talent. He has great length and size, so he's intriguing.
Right.
But these last 2 years with the Spurs, they have just added up so many question marks for me that I'm not giving up like an Avery Bradley for LaMarcus at this point.
I think the theory with giving up Bradley is he's also going to be a free agent in 2018.
Right, right. Know,
if they, yeah. whatever, we'll talk about Boston shortly, but they're going to have too many guards and not enough money to pay them all. So you'd be getting something for a guy who might walk away for nothing. But yeah, I mean, it's yeah. a fair, you know, it speaks to, I think it speaks to how his value has fallen around the league. And we're seeing this basically with every non-quote-unquote unicorn big man. You know, any guy who yeah. can't shoot threes and protect the rim. It's just, it seems like those are a dying breed, and LaMarcus cashed in when he should have, which is great. But, you know, it's going to make it harder for him to return, quote-unquote, equal value. Sarah?
Well, call the Knicks.
Look,
I mean,
who do they have?
Right. They want to play. Yeah, they want to play Kristaps at the five, which I get. Yeah. So there you go. Get a power forward in there.
I get. Yeah,
he's a name. Sarah, he's a name. James Dolan loves names.
Do you want a Carmelo Kawhi front court next year?
I probably would take it at this point.
Oh no! So you are also out on LaMarcus staying a Spur.
I mean, I don't want to be rude. He made strides. He honestly did defensively at times, hitting the glass. But as Morton pointed out, it wasn't great in this last series there. I think you made a great point, Brian, that it's kind of the times have turned against him for a number of reasons. He's kind of always been a guy who's lived in those quote-unquote inefficient spaces. Mm-hmm. And he used to, you know, make some hay there, but I think Zach Lowe pointed out against the Warriors, or actually I think it was in the playoffs, let's check this. He was shooting 29% on long twos in the playoffs.
Oof. Lord.
Yeah, he used to not be up around 50%, but low 40s on those shots. And yeah, you just can't make that work. 29%. Now there, a lot of people have been pointing out that he didn't have that pick and pop creator, especially after Tony went out. That, I mean, there's some truth to that, but he just really all year he was not hitting that shot very much. It really the last 2 years with the Spurs, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, but that's a big concern. So I would be interested and maybe not want to know what the market would be at this point. Yeah, it's just, you know, we're in the era of hyper-efficiency or worrying about, you know, where you're getting your points. And so, you know, he was never a sexy pick in the Morey ball style of play. Right. And, yeah, when he's not hitting that shot, it really makes things difficult.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so before we move on to Boston, do you see any other major needs for the Spurs this offseason?
Power forward, center? yeah, I just think there are some big question marks there in the front court. Yeah, I mean, Dedmon, you probably lose. David Lee, we don't know what's going to happen there. I thought he was really good this year. I honestly really enjoyed him in a Spurs uniform.
Danish girlfriend.
Morris, you're going to keep pushing that. Yeah, but you know, he was hurt. You don't know if he's going to opt in or out. Powell probably opts in, I'm guessing.
Right.
You got LaMarcus for at least another year, unless, you know, he moves somehow. So there's questions there. And then, like you mentioned, point guard, we'll see. I, in my heart of hearts, am going to believe that Tony comes back and is able to be effective again at some point. But you most likely start the year without him. And then you've got a really young guy behind him. We don't know if Patty's coming back. So those are really the biggest question marks right now. They're pretty good on the wing. But then again, you don't know if Manu's coming back off the bench. Right. So we'll see. It's another year of probably transition and change. But I'm grateful that it's been kind of a gradual thing. So we've been able to survive, and thank God for Kawhi.
Right. Yeah, and you got
Davis. That's a bumper sticker right there.
You still have Davis Bertans, too, so you get your That's guys right. are good on the wings. All right,
I'm happy with the youngsters. I'm excited about them. So.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi is going to, you guys, as long as Pop is there and Kawhi is there, you're going to win 50 games if he trots out D-leaguers and Kawhi. So you're good. Feel bad for you.
Right.
Look, there's another factor here. This is a deep draft. So at 29, you can actually get a guy who could be in your rotation next year.
Yeah.
Like, that could happen. If Jawan Evans slips, like, that's my guy for the Spurs. Okay. Like, this is, like, yeah, this is, he's short. He's, like, 5'11", but he's one of those guys. Like, he is a superb floor leader. And he can score, he can shoot and get into the paint. I would love to see him, like, you know, probably not end up being a starting point guard for San Antonio down the line, but at least one of those guys who can get, like, 25, 28 minutes off the bench for, like, 10 years of his career. Like, there are a lot of good picks down there. So you are going to get more youth. And if there's one team I'm not nervous about getting most out of their youth, it's San Antonio. So, yeah.
Right, and finding a gem at 29. Something tells me it's going to happen, like it does every year. All right, let's move on to the Celtics, who equally suffered an equally dispiriting loss in the conference finals. You know, game two, they just got, it was, what the worst halftime deficit in NBA history for the playoffs. Isaiah Thomas had a hip injury, which he apparently suffered during the Washington series. He aggravated it in game two, missed the rest of the playoffs. It is unclear whether he needs surgery. Strangely, in game three, they actually played well without him. Marcus Smart hit 7 threes, so they steal a game in Cleveland. Had a big lead in game four that, you know, Kyrie Irving wiped out because he's Kyrie Irving. And then the Cavs walloped the Celtics in game five to put them out of their misery and send them to the offseason. So, the Celtics can't be too upset because they have the number one pick. In all likelihood, they will be drafting Markelle Fultz with that pick. Whether they keep it or trade it, we will talk about in a minute. I mean, the big question, I think, Mort, is Isaiah Thomas because, as I mentioned, I mean, that Game 3 performance without him, that was really interesting. The Cavs did not get the good looks they were getting in Games 1 and 2, And it goes back to, you know, hey, Isaiah Thomas had the worst real defensive plus minus in the league this year. He's a 5'9 guard. In the playoffs, that hurts you more than it does during the regular season because you can scheme more specifically against that. So, you know, they're in position to get Markel Fultz. Isaiah Thomas is a year away from unrestricted free agency. He's going to be 29. He's almost certainly in line to receive a max contract or a near max contract. So if Boston would hand him that deal, we're talking about 5 years, $200 million. So what do you think Boston should do with IT this summer? Should they keep him and hold their nose and figure out 2018 in 2018? Should they shop him around? Should they try to sign him to an extension that's not a max?
Well, you take calls. That's probably the one thing. You take calls on him. You don't go to the media and say anything about shopping him or whatever. You do it low key. Like, you don't aggressively pursue anything, but if something shows up, then you listen to it and you talk to your team and you find out what the best play is. You have to be cautious with this. The thing about game three, I just want to touch upon this because LeBron had a horrible game and I think he was ill and so that came into it, but there was another factor, and it is when you take a high volume scorer out, then you are going to see a different look in the other game, because then you have a whole bunch of offense that needs to be replaced by not one guy or two guys, but like 5, 6, 7, 8 guys. When that happens, it throws the opponent off wag a little bit. Like, that's also why we on occasion see teams that made a big trade and, you know, win their initial game, even though the guys that they traded for are on the bench not playing. It's just because it's a different look. You can't really game plan for something that you haven't really seen. So it was just like the perfect storm. I'm not really taking that win all that seriously at all. Like, Marcus Smart hit 7 threes.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes just things goes your way. But, no, I mean, I was talking about this on Twitter regarding Thomas, and it's difficult because obviously Markel Fultz is going to be the future at the point guard position, or at least, you know, at one of the guard spots. IT at 29 when he and at what 5'8", 5'9", is not a long term, you know, staple there. He shouldn't be, because his game is, I don't think his game is going to age very well at all. So I would definitely keep the phone lines open, and when push comes to shove, you know, with the renegotiation part, I would probably offer him a 2-year deal where I just top him out completely, like salary wise, and then tell him, you know what, you know, truth be told, we need you for 2 years, and we're gonna pay you like a superstar for 2 years, and afterwards Markel is gonna take over. Like, and in those 2 years, we are going to go for the championship. We are going to go balls to the walls for this championship. See what happens. Then obviously you would have to start Markel as the 2 guard, but I think he can do that. 6'4", 6'10" wingspan, athletic. I mean, why not?
Yeah. So it sounds like you are more in the camp. You're not rushing to trade Isaiah right now. You're willing.
Well, I mean, if a good deal pops up tomorrow.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I do it. So I don't think I fall into any camp, really. I want to be patient, and I want to look at it like objectively. Like, if I get an objectively good offer right now, I look at the big picture, and I make a decision based on that. And if that deal I'm offered is putting Boston in a better position, especially with the Fultz coming in, I do it tomorrow and I don't look back. Like, this, it seems to me that this Boston situation is going to be extremely difficult to mess up, like, for Danny Ainge. Like, to the point where I'm almost tempted to say, you know what, Danny Ainge, you shouldn't even get an Executive of the Year award at any point, because, like, this is all just, you should just kick back and make simple decisions from here on out. Like, their greatness is almost destined at this point.
Okay, so let's move to their other two guards. Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, same situation. Avery Bradley is an unrestricted free agent 2018. Marcus Smart is restricted. Do you feel the same way about both of them, where you're listening to offers, you're willing to take a good deal, but you're not rushing to trade either one? Or do you think, you know, with Thomas's payday on the horizon, Fultz coming in, you need to move one of those two guards this offseason.
I don't think I need to move one of those two guys. I think I need to move Terry Rozier.
The untouchable Terry Rozier.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the guy I probably would, you know, move. Avery Bradley, I think, would work tremendously alongside Markel Fultz.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a ball heavy guy, and he takes like a lot of off ball shots. He's a terrific defender. Then you could actually have Marcus Smart playing both guard spots off the bench. So if that's your core moving forward, you know, Fultz, Bradley, and Smart, I'll take that. Like, I know there's a slight difference in age from Bradley to Fultz, but I'll live with that. That's not a concern to me. And in regards to contract, I'm not sure that Bradley is going to get offered a max in this new financial climate.
Right.
Like, if he is offered and takes something around 17, 18 million a year,
mm-hmm.
I'll take that. Like, yeah. But if he demands 25, 26, then I'll make a call when that happens.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I do not. I mean, Godspeed to whatever team gives Avery Bradley a max deal when it's
right.
You know, $30+ million for him. All right, let's talk about the big decision, though. So, you know, remove their impending free agents, because that's a year away. Come June 22nd, they have the number one overall pick. Do you think there's any chance they do not take Markel Fultz there?
No.
Okay. So
this is Fultz. This is the Fultz draft. This is like a surefire, you know, Anthony Davis draft.
Mm-hmm. So, if you're the Celtics, are you willing to trade that pick for, say, a Paul George or a Jimmy Butler? Or do you think you should keep that? And, you know, you're talking about Paul George. You know, obviously, right now, if you're gunning for a title right now, Paul George is going to be more valuable than Markel Fultz is next year. But you have 1 year of team control with Paul George. You have two with Jimmy Butler. In theory, if all goes well, you have 9 with Markel Fultz. So, with those factors in mind, do you make that all-in push, or do you keep Fultz and say, you know, you guys, look, if you want to trade him, we'll talk about that 2018 Nets pick, we'll dangle some of our other pieces, but Fultz is off limits?
I have thought long and hard about this, because I've seen Boston fans on Twitter a lot, especially you know, Michael Pena and Jay King make great points about the situation that they're in. They can't get Markel Fultz, and then they could theoretically sign Gordon Hayward in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
If that is the case, then obviously that's the preferred option. So here's where I landed. If I can facilitate trades that end up having Paul George and Jimmy Butler both go to Boston, and where your main piece is Fultz going out, like your main piece, and then, of course, there's going to be a whole lot of different components attached, but, like, Fultz is the key guy to getting this thing done. Yes, I sacrifice it. Then I go all in with Isaiah Thomas, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Al Horford, and then that's probably going to be the main core, because you'd have to have guys like Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart. They're probably going to be moved.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly even Jay Crowder as well. But then I go forward with that. But that is really the only scenario in which I give up Fultz.
Okay. So you think...
both guys.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I'm with you in that. I mean, especially with Paul George, it just sounds like he so wants to play for the Lakers that I don't think any other team can give up anything of value for him. Because there's, you know, maybe he really likes Boston and he, you know, he thinks he has a chance to compete for a title there. But, you know, what happens in 2018, when both he and Isaiah Thomas are free agents? If one of them leaves, the other one probably leaves. So that one, definitely no go for me. And then Jimmy, you know, I like Jimmy Butler. I think he's an all-star caliber player. He's, you know, I think if he was on the Celtics this year, they're pushing the Cavs to at least 6, if not 7. They might, you know, they might even have a chance to win if LeBron's virus knocked him out for a couple games.
I'm actually there. I think they would have beaten the Cavs.
You think so? But then, yes. You know, turn around and you have the Warriors. So,
yeah, they wouldn't have beat them, right. But I do think they would have beaten the Cavs, because I think people are sleeping on the season that Jimmy Butler had.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was phenomenal this year. So I would be more willing to entertain that, depending on what else Boston wanted or Chicago wanted in return. Like, if the Bulls were unwilling to do just
Magic Beans or something.
Yeah, right. Like, if they weren't willing to do Jimmy for Vault straight up, definitely no deal. But I'm still leaning toward just keeping Fultz, and then, you know, I think it's there, as you said, Danny Ainge is in this, like, great spot where he can compete for now and compete for later. Like, he's building two separate teams on the same roster where, you know, IT and Horford are going to keep them relevant for the next couple of years, and same with Jay Crowder, Smart, Bradley, at least through 2018. But then you've also got this young core of Jaylen Brown, theoretically Markelle Fultz, that 2018 Nets pick, which is probably going to be, you know,
top three.
I don't know. I mean, they'll enter the lottery with good odds. Whether that means, you know, they could get screwed, like Phoenix was number two and they fell to four. That said, I also don't think the Nets were as bad this year as their record indicates. If Jeremy Lin stays healthy, they win at least five more games, probably closer to 10.
That's true.
If they sign Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or Otto Porter or someone, and they actually can get a restricted free agent to come to them this summer, they could make some strides. So I don't think that, you know, they're not guaranteed the number one pick, but they are probably getting at least a mid-lottery, if not high-lottery pick next year. So
Ricky O'Donnell made a great point on HB Nation, and he said if Boston is in a position to get, like, an elite young big man in 2018, like a Mo Bamba, who's attending Texas, for example, then that is going to be your Al Horford replacement down the line.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you have that team there that's just waiting to grow.
Right.
Because that's, right now, that's really the need. Mm-hmm. You know, you have Al Horford, and that's great and all, but he's getting older. You don't have that big man waiting in the wings. Oh, yeah, sure, you have Ante Sitchich and you have Gerson Yabusele, but that's, right. You know, those are... You know, they project to be good players, obviously, but they are not as known components as someone like Mo Bamba, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not held in that similar regard.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's going to be a very interesting summer for Boston. They will obviously be at the forefront of a lot of talk between now and the draft, now in free agency. You know, we mentioned Gordon Hayward already as a possibility for them, so we will revisit the Celtics a bunch in the next month or so. Now let's turn to the NBA Finals, because we have a week off, but they finally start Thursday. It's Cavs-Warriors 3, the rubber match to end all rubber matches. Sarah, here's my first question. Can LeBron James conjure the same type of magic that he did during those ridiculous game 5-7 last year?
I'm never gonna bet against him conjuring any kind of magic. that was really, really transcendent stuff. What I think is more unlikely to be repeated is that the series is quite that great, and that was just about impossible to top. I think he can do it. The bigger question will be kind of how often can they actually get stops. Although I will say, watching the Warriors-Spurs series, and I guess you could argue the Warriors were not sufficiently inspired facing what was left of the Spurs, but I didn't see dominance. I didn't see, except for game two. I mean, they really didn't run the Spurs out of the gym, which they probably should have. Definitely saw some frustration at times. Steph threw some really strange passes again, turnovers. That's still there. The trump card is that they now have KD to throw it to, who can kind of rescue them from those moments. I don't know. I'm interested, though, to see how it goes. At this point, I'm not feeling like it's going to be a cakewalk for the Warriors. Mm-hmm. I'm not feeling like they're going to blow through it, but I'm wondering what you guys think.
Oh man, like I initially had the Warriors just, you know, getting, you know, sweeping the Cavs like 4-0, but the LeBron factor is just so real, and it's impossible to answer, really, because it could be a situation where it's just the perfect storm, and, you know, for Cleveland, and everything for the Dubs just, you know, hangs together beautifully and perfectly and in harmony and whatever. And then we could see similar things as Sarah alluded to, like last year, where, you know, they tend to make weird passes and they're not really in tune, and KD might be playing outside of the offense. Like, we don't know. They've coasted a fair bit this year just based on pure talent.
Right.
So I honestly don't know. I expect the Warriors to win because of the talent amount they have there. And when I look at this scene right now, I think they need to gather around KD and just make him like their king. You know, the West Coast king, because it seems like he's their best option, even you know, handling the ball. Like, Curry is, I don't know what it is, like, he's had an off season. If it's due to KD, I'm not sure, or if it's just because he's played a lot. Like, let's not forget, this is their third finals in a row. Like,
right,
players get tired. We always talk about the fatigue level that LeBron is going through, and this is his seventh straight finals, for crying out loud. Like, this happens to teams that are not on a seven finals run as well. And this is the third time in a row. So there could be some fatigue factor going in into this one for the Dubs as well, especially facing the same team. Like, I think that's a level of fatigueness as well. Like, oh, this is the same team for the third time in a row. You know, we've been there, done that, la-da-la-da-la-da. You know, there isn't that new team where you have to, like, get up and go, oh, we haven't faced these guys like seven games yet. I don't know, it's going to be interesting. What about you, Brian? Like, where is it, dominance for the Dubs or LeBron-ness all the way?
I mean, I think it's going to be dominance for the Dubs, but I think LeBron's going to keep them in the series. That they would, you know, if not for him, they'd otherwise get annihilated. But I, Sarah, as you said, we've learned the lesson every playoffs: do not count out LeBron James, especially, you know, he's facing a 3-1 deficit against a historically great team last year. And, you know, what I think what he did during those three games, and we were talking about this, we had a B-ball breakdown email thread about this a couple weeks ago, where, like, Coach Nick was looking for signature moments of LeBron James' career, especially his playoff career. And he was like, you know, he doesn't really have, like, MJ's the shot. He's got, you know, he had the block against Iggy in Game 7 last year, but he doesn't have, like, those signature, he doesn't have a flu game, he doesn't have the shrug. I'm thinking those three games, like, the totality of those three games were his moment, you know, and it culminates with the block. But, like, those were three of the most sublime basketball performances I've ever seen. And for him to do it right in a row was just unreal. So, I think the fact that they went 12-1 throughout the playoffs so far, that's going to buy both teams a lot of needed rest. Like, I'm not worried about fatigue being as much of an issue as it was last year for Golden State, coming off of that seven-game OKC series where, you know, where Steph is already on a hobbled ankle. Like, both teams are entering pretty healthy. Kyrie had that ankle scare against Boston, but, you know, for what we know, at least, there's no major lingering injuries, so I think both teams should be healthy. As you said, more the talent differential there leads me to go with the Warriors, but, you know, again, like, LeBron has shown that he can single-handedly take over games, and the Cavs have proven this year that they can compete with this Warriors team. They, you know, they were facing a double-digit deficit on Christmas Day, and they came back and won. So, I'm like you, Mort. I go between, like, thinking it's going to be a rout for the Warriors, and then I'm like, oh, no, the Cavs, you know, they have LeBron, they have Kyrie, and Kevin Love, you know, he's played exceedingly well in the playoffs this year. So that's my next question, because Love last year in the NBA Finals averaged 8.5 points and 6.8 rebounds a game. This year, he's basically doubling both in the playoffs. So, Mort, do you think he's going to continue beasting like he has? Or do you think the Warriors, especially with that death lineup, are going to run him off the floor?
Well, I don't think they're going to run him off the floor, but I think he is going to cool down a little bit. He's going up against Draymond, and you probably also looking at some minutes at the four for KD, who's long, athletic, and really underrated defensively. So I could see him getting into trouble early on in games when he tries to establish himself. But, you know, he's so good at moving off the ball. He's going to get touches from the outside. It's just a question of him being able to utilize the possessions when you have someone else on him. Like, if he has a mismatch, just take it into the post. Get his all-around scoring game going. Like, don't pigeonhole him. Mm-hmm. That's really the most important thing. But I don't anticipate him going off for, like, 22-12 right. at all. What's a more interesting question to me is, we're talking about this talent differential, and we're including Klay Thompson in this, whereas mm-hmm. we maybe shouldn't be, because his playoff PER for this year is 8.4.
Yeah. Yeah.
8.4 in over 400 minutes. He's essentially the seventh... No, that's not even seventh. Like, tenth guy right now.
Yeah. He's playing as one. To the Harrison Barnes of this year.
Yeah, he has. So... what's that all about? Like, if he goes into this final series and just can't really connect on open, wide open jump shots, and he's just a non-factor, then suddenly that becomes a bit more of a fair game.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, last year he averaged almost 20 points a game in the finals. You know, he didn't shoot all that well from three, shot only about 35%, but... still, you know, Steph also was only 40% overall. So, in theory, Steph's going to be a little more efficient. Now the question is, you know, does Klay fall into the Harrison Barnes that role where he just, you know, can't really do anything, as you said, brick a bunch of open threes, or does he regain his playoff mojo just in time? Sarah, you mentioned the late game issues that Golden State had earlier in the year. And do you think those are going to be a factor here? Especially because they haven't really been tested in the playoffs. And most, you know, I think they played, I forget where I saw this stat, but they played like 8 clutch minutes, I think, throughout that whole.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, they've just been annihilating everyone. So they haven't, you know, they haven't had a chance to have those issues pop up. But if they're in a 3-point game in the final minute, do you think that weird deferential thing between Steph and KD could come back to haunt them?
What I want to say is we can only hope, right?
Yeah.
I do think there will be some close games in this finals. I sure as hell hope so. And yeah, if that happens, there's a very real possibility that rears its ugly head again. I think someone pointed out recently that the two of them, Steph and KD, have kind of played their best together over the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think against the Spurs, they kind of had it together. But at the same time, it seems like when it's working, it's because they're just going to KD. So I wouldn't say that it's ideal. I don't know if you ever reach an ideal between two superstars like that. It's a really tough thing to do. So yeah, I think we might see that. I'm leaning towards yes. And like I said, hopeful that we will. I want to go back to what Morton said about potentially Kevin Love cooling down, because he's going to see some Draymond and he's going to see some KD, mm-hmm. probably. I would say that if that ends up being the case, I would take that. As Cleveland, I'm taking that, because that's not Draymond on LeBron or Durant on LeBron. So I'm going for that, because that means, you know, LeBron's destroying Steph on pick and roll switches again or something like that. So, yes, please. I also wanted to go back to, I remember the email thread from B-Ball Breakdown talking about LeBron's signature playoff moments. And what question that raises for me is, like, what are Durant's? You know, like, because it's not fair, because it's a little what have you done for me lately, but what immediately comes to mind are games 6 and 7 of the Western Conference Finals last year, which is not the kind of playoff moment you want to remember for a guy. So I don't want to go like full Stephen A. Smith, KD ain't built for war. there's those questions there. I think he's really driven this year, but I do think he feels a little bit of the pressure. He's just not having to carry as much of it, which is good for him. But they are going to have to rely on him at times. So we'll see what happens. He has been really good. He was great against the Spurs, but he did not have to face Kawhi for the majority of that series. So I feel like LeBron's going to bully him again, like he did in 2012. But we shall see.
I wanted to ask about KD especially, because, you know, he did not have to face Kawhi, so he got off easy there. You know, the Cavs obviously have LeBron, who, when he wants to, is still an all-world defender. Who else on the Cavs roster do you think is capable of defending KD?
That is a really good question, because...
Crickets.
Yeah. It's really not anybody. I mean, perhaps in close-to-the-basket situations, Thompson could bother him with size at times.
Mm-hmm.
But really, yeah, 90% of people, Kevin Durant's just going to shoot over like he did all throughout the Western Conference Finals. Got a good look at that. Yeah, I mean, they really don't. LeBron's going to have to carry a lot of weight on both ends.
Right.
But we've seen him do it before, but it's a big ask.
Yeah, that's my one thing. I keep coming back to that when I'm trying to figure out who's going to win the series and how many games. Because, you know, last year, you could hide LeBron on Harrison Barnes at times, and you could catch a breather on defense. Whereas this year, no Harrison Barnes, yes, KD. He's probably going to have to...
Yeah.
Exert more effort on that end of the floor. So then, you know, if it comes down to game seven, the final 2 minutes, is he going to have the energy to do that kind of a sprint down the court and chase down Black? You know, it's an open question. I mean, none of us know the answer, because we don't know how he's feeling, and maybe that week of rest gets him rejuvenated. This new final schedule, you know, gives them a little bit more rest built into the structure, which is great. But that's a concern of mine. I feel like Richard Jefferson, J.R. Smith, like, those are probably the, you know, they'll see some minutes on him, but there isn't, at least I don't think there's a good answer aside from LeBron has to be the MVP on both sides of the floor for the Cavs to win this.
You know, he's going to have to sacrifice offensively. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't go out there looking to get 30.
Right.
Kyrie has to be the scorer. I said this last year, too, and, you know, LeBron, he basically told me to shut up. I'll handle this myself.
Right.
But, which is entirely fair. But, yeah. Like, this is where Kyrie Irving needs to, you know, become this 27, 29-point scorer throughout the course of the series. He needs to be on, and he needs to be the focal point of the offense. So LeBron can step it back a little bit offensively and balance his game out a little Scottie Pippen-esque, maybe. Mm-hmm. That would be in you know, good favor for him, because then he can save energy for the final, you know, 2 minutes of the game if it's necessary. Of course, if they come out swinging like the Dubs do, and you know, the Cavs find themselves down early, then what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of putting LeBron James into as many possessions offensively and defensively as humanly possible, if I'm the Dubs, because then I tire him out at some point.
Right.
I mean, he is human, I think.
Yeah, so they tell us. Yeah, I mean, to your point, Kyrie last year in the finals averaged 27.1. LeBron had 29.7. Right. No other Cavaliers player had more than 10.6. So if they get that, you know, assuming LeBron has to take a step back offensively, averages closer to 22, 23, they're going to need more production elsewhere, which is a good way for us to seg into the X factors of this series. So more for Cleveland, who would you have as an X factor?
Well, Kevin Love, obviously. Mm-hmm. Look, his talent is undeniable. And even though that I talked about him maybe, you know, getting into trouble with Draymond and KD and whatever, he is still one of the premier power forwards in this league. Like, he just came off in the Eastern Conference Final Series where he averaged 22.5 and 12.5 boards in 33 minutes a game. Like, this guy can do things, and the Cavs need him to do things. They need him to rebound at a high level. Mm-hmm. They need him to stretch the court at a high level. They need him to get to the line at a high level. They just need him to be aggressive. And even if that translates into like 17 points a game, and, you know, it doesn't matter. Just be aggressive. Be a part of the game plan, night in and night out. Be a guy that the Warriors have to talk about.
Yeah.
So, Kevin Love for sure.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, to your point, like, rebounding-wise, it's really important to limit the Warriors to one possession. Like, you're going to... Mm-hmm. You know, they have the number one... Or the number one ranked offense, they have the number two ranked defense. So it's already going to be hard enough for you to score on them. You need to hold them. Like, if they're getting second and third chances, you're dead. So that's where I see Love making the biggest impact. You know, hopefully he scores more than 8.5 per game like he did last year, and I think he will. But it's, you know, almost arguably more important that he's averaging closer to 10 rebounds than it is he's averaging 15 points, I think.
Oh, 15 rebounds. We're going to need to go up in that area.
Yeah.
I don't think 10 rebounds cuts it. And that's because my next X factor for the Dubs, JaVale McGee.
Ooh, interesting.
Because here's another guy who is immensely talented and highly productive on a permanent basis. I would not be surprised at all if Mike Brown increases his minutes in the finals, just because it creates a lot of activity around the basket. He could clean up the offensive glass. Like, he could compete for rebounds. He's a huge human being.
Right.
He really is a large human being, and he's athletic as hell. He can run the court. He can catch lobs. He can get high up for blocks. Like, he is just a human pogo stick, and they need to use him as such. So if he comes in and becomes that, you know, finals difference maker, because he has two or three games where he ends up with a double-double, then that's going to be one heck of a help.
You know, I was about to say I'm not ready to live in a world where JaVale McGee is finals MVP, but then I remembered Donald Trump is president, so I guess all bets are off.
And Iggy won the finals MVP, so if Iggy wins the finals MVP, everything is open.
Right, right. Sarah, you know, you are fresh off watching the Warriors annihilate your team. So who is your X factor for Golden State?
For Golden State, well, I think JaVale's a really good pick, Mort, because he does give them that other dimension, that roller to the rim that you have to account for when you're worried about all those shooters. But I just want to kind of cheat a little bit and say the Warriors' defense. And Brian, you mentioned that it was second-ranked all year. Really, really good defense. I thought that it was a little suspect versus the Spurs. A little lazy at times. And it may have been as simple as they're facing people, like we said, that they don't see often. You know, you got Kyle Anderson out there, Jonathan Simmons. Patty's a starter. It's just really weird. So it may have been that, just differences in personnel and trying to account for a different style of play from the Spurs than what they were used to. But, I mean, you're looking at the last two games of that series, I think they gave up 115 and 108 to the Spurs with who? You know, Kawhi out, Tony out, David Lee out. Obviously, it's going to be higher scoring because there's more possessions when the Warriors are pushing like that, but there's still no reason for that, no excuse for that. So I'll be interested to see if they can lock in and play the defense that they're capable of. I don't think that the Cavaliers could win this thing, but I just want to see, because I haven't seen that defense from them in a little while. And then for the Cavs, Kevin Love again is a great pick, especially as far as rebounding. That you got to rebound to beat the Warriors. But I'm gonna go JR. JR Smith. If he gets hot, he plays. If he's engaged defensively as well, and can take some pressure off of Kyrie and LeBron on the other end, hey, that would be huge.
Yeah, JR is a great pick. So I'm gonna go. I'll start with the Warriors, and I feel like this is cheating, but we also didn't mention him that much in the last 20 minutes. So Andre Iguodala. I mean, you know, if you're playing the death lineup, he's the one who's probably drawing the LeBron assignment, at least mostly, because I feel like you want to keep KD off of him, because as you mentioned, Sarah, he can, you know, KD isn't always the most physical. LeBron's probably going to bully him. Iggy has proven throughout the last two finals that even though LeBron's got 2 inches and about 40 pounds on him, that he can still pester LeBron and make life difficult on him. Offensively, too, I mean, he's been somewhat sneaky bad in the playoffs. I mean, he's shooting 42% from the field. He's only hit 3 of 27 of his 3-point attempts. So, you know, you don't want Iggy to be your primary scorer, obviously, but, you know, maybe that's a place, if the death lineup is on the floor, maybe that's a place LeBron can hide defensively. If, you know, if Iggy's standing in the corner and he can't make you pay for that, or LeBron can kind of do his little roaming free safety thing and just leave Iggy open and then, you know, kind of double team wherever he wants to. So Iggy on both ends, I think, will be a big factor for Golden State. For Cleveland, I'm going to go to a guy who I forgot to mention when we were talking about players who could defend KD, and that's Iman Shumpert. You know, not a huge player in the rotation for Cleveland, but again, just maybe someone who you can throw, basically someone who can, you know, spare you a couple minutes of LeBron having to defend KD, hopefully, a guy who you can kind of park in the corner and hope for the occasional three-point shot. He's shooting 47% from three on the playoffs, only 17 attempts, so that's a really small sample size, but, you know, again, anywhere you can get points outside of LeBron and Kyrie, it will be helpful. So if he has one of those games where he gets hot, hits four threes, that could help swing a game. And that's, you know, in a seven-game series, that's a big deal. So I think all three of us did a good job picking out some X-Factors. So now it is time for a prediction. Mort, hit us with your hot takes.
Yeah, as long as I don't become Stephen A. Smith and I just, like, bail on my last... What was it? How many series in a row?
Since 2011, he has gotten everyone wrong. That's spectacular.
That is impressive in its own right.
It really is.
Obviously, Dubs. Mm-hmm. Like, that's... I just can't imagine with that level of talent. I just can't. But in regards to how many games... It's between 5 and 6, mm-hmm. maybe even 7. That's really the thing, because if they hit their level, I mean, they could blow them out.
Right.
They legitimately could. But if they don't, they could actually end up, actually losing it, if I really have to be, you know, hard on them. So, I'm just going to say Warriors in 6. That allows me a little bit of flexibility.
That does. That's the good meat in the middle pick.
The sweet spot right there. Just because if it goes 7, oh, it was one game off. It goes 5, oh, one game off.
Right.
It's okay.
Right. It's only if they sweep that you have no confidence in them.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, Sarah, how about you?
I think Mort's probably right. But I'm going to go Cavs in 6.
Whoa!
Ooh. Yeah, why the hell not? I had some fun with my Western Conference Finals pick. It did not go well at all, but I'm going to do the same thing here. And it's really, you know, probably by game one, even maybe by halftime of game one, I'll see how wrong I might be. But it's really just taking that really slim chance that some of the things that I saw, the nitpicky things in the conference finals,
mm-hmm.
continue. Because I think there were some openings for this Cavs offense to score and to really put some pressure on the Warriors. Like I said, if they focus in and they lock in and they play the defense they're capable of, that won't happen at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure that they're ready yet. I think, as Morton mentioned, they've kind of cruised through a lot of the season. They haven't faced really that adversity since the finals last year. So there might be a chance to catch them off guard a little bit and to put them in a hole.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals, you know, mm-hmm. pre-Zaza attacking Kawhi. They were, up 23 points? Like, they are not invincible. They just look that way because they've faced three injury-ravaged teams in a row. But hopefully everyone will at least stay healthy this time around. I'm with you in thinking, you know, I'm torn between 5 and 6. And I said it a couple minutes ago that you should never doubt LeBron in the playoffs, so... That said, I have not yet learned my lesson, and I'm taking the Warriors in 5. Every time I go back to, you know, they lost a lot of bench depth this year, but they swapped out Harrison Barnes with Kevin Durant, and if Klay Thompson even regains a little bit of the form he had last year, I think, you know, hopefully it's more competitive than I'm expecting, but I really mm-hmm. think the 3-1 jokes pissed the Warriors off a lot. And I think they will do everything in their power to avenge that loss and prove that, you know, they are the team to be most afraid of for the next 2 to 3 years. So, Warriors in 5.
And in regards to, like, losing debt,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just going to throw this out there. JaVale McGee had a PER of 25.2 over the course of the season. Like, I know he played just 10 minutes a game, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean... That kind of productivity from the bench, even if it is 10 minutes a game,
yeah.
That's insane. So there is a level of absurdity there, as well as in the starting lineup, which is partly why I'm on the Warriors here. They just have so many weapons, and if Klay Thompson should, you know, somehow get back to where he was, game over.
Yeah. So hopefully it will prove to be a competitive series. Hell, hopefully Sarah's right. Cavs in six happens, and then we can make just all of the Twitter jokes, because Warriors fans are especially insufferable as of late.
I should mention that you know, they did have some people out, too, and that could be a part of the reason why their defense was not great against the Spurs. Obviously, Zaza, my favorite, did not play the rest of the series. I think they were missing Iguodala for a game or two, at least a game and a half, with the back, so... You know, I mean, there's some explanation for that. And they should not have any complacency going into the finals against a team that beat you after you had the 3-1 lead. So that shouldn't be the case, but you never know.
One would hope. So the finals start Thursday. We will obviously be talking about them over the next couple episodes as well. I want to wrap things up with a few free agent quick hitters because, you know, obviously the offseason has started for 28 teams. There have started to be some reports out about potential moves. Sarah, one of which is involving your Spurs. Apparently, the Clippers are legitimately concerned that Chris Paul could join them, according to ESPN's Mark Stein. It would take some finagling. They don't have the cap space to do it right away. I think, assuming they keep LaMarcus Aldridge, they would need to move two of the three of Pau Gasol, Tony Parker, and Danny Green. If they somehow traded LaMarcus and took no salary back, I think it would still be a couple million short. But, you know, you have to assume at least two of the four of LaMarcus, Pau, Danny, and Tony are gone if you're signing Chris Paul. So, A, do you think that's worth it to sign Chris Paul? And B, do you think he would be a good fit in San Antonio?
I'm not in favor of it, honestly. I don't think that would really be the right move for them. Obviously, Chris Paul is one of the best to ever do it at that position. I'm sure it would look frighteningly awesome from my end, but I just don't. I think you'd have to sacrifice too much. I think, yeah, it's too difficult to make it happen. And not only that, but selfishly, you know, CP is a very ball-dominant guy. I want the ball in Kawhi's hands more, not less. So I don't want to see it, honestly. I'm sure that it would work well. Pop would be able to figure that out. CP, I mean, he's a team-first guy. It's just, you know, his style is very ball-dominant. I'm sure he could get Kawhi some great looks, too. But it's just, yeah, I'm not in favor of it, honestly.
Interesting. What, Mort, do you think Sarah's crazy, or do you agree?
No, I get the line of thinking, but I just think if you have a shot at Chris Paul, you at least have to look at the options. Like, could you move these other pieces to make room for him? And then you have to evaluate, is it too much? Mm-hmm. What exactly are we giving up in totality? What would be a better alternative is, and this is assuming Gordon Hayward signs in Boston or elsewhere than Utah, is getting, like, Pop's old best buddy George Hill back in the fold.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that would be beautiful in its own way, because he's not, like, ball dominant. You can still have you know, Kawhi primarily be the on-ball creator. And you can have George Hill spotting up, and when it's necessary, you hand the ball over to Hill, who can initiate the offense. And he knows the system. I mean, Lord knows he knows the system already. So that would be, I mean, I would prefer Hill to Paul, just also because of what Sarah mentioned. Like, the Spurs isn't really, you know, a team that is that star dominant in that sense. Like, yeah. CP3 is high maintenance. Mm-hmm. Most of the guys from the Spurs aren't, so there would be, I guess, a break there, you know, in the logic there. Whereas George Hill comes in, he's just like a straight up professional. Yeah. That would just make a hell of a lot more sense.
Yeah, and he knows the Spurs culture, so he's proven that he can fit there before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough decision because, I mean, yeah, as Sarah, as you said, he's like one of the best in this generation, if not best ever, to play that position. But that's a lot of money for a guy who's not getting any younger. He's already 32. You'd be paying him, you know, $45 million in his age 36 season. So that just makes me nervous on its own about not only him, but all of the older point guards. So I lean toward your camp, Sarah, where I think I would rather see them target someone a little bit younger, a little bit cheaper. If I'm the Spurs, I'm going hard after Drew Holiday, personally, because assuming his stress fracture injuries, you know, that all checks out medically. You know, he's just a lot younger. He'd be cheaper because he's not on the 10-year max. I think he can play. He proved that this year that he can play off-ball as well as he can play on-ball. So, Sarah, your concerns about, you know, keeping the ball in Kawhi's hands. Drew's a pretty good three-point shooter, good defender. I think that would be, you know, kind of the happy medium there. But yeah. I don't know how realistic, you know. We don't know. We haven't heard rumblings yet about whether Drew is seriously entertaining offers outside of New Orleans. So we'll have to
see. Well, they'll make the conference finals, unlike with CP3.
Right. Oh, no. Okay.
Well, you can't call him the best point guard ever when he hasn't made a conference finals. I get it. I get that the skill set wise, he's right up there, but and team success is you know, means less and less today. But come on, can't call him the greatest ever point guard if he hasn't made the conference finals.
Yeah,
well, no way.
Yeah, I don't want the Spurs to be ruined by that streak. So go for Drew. All right, we need to talk about my Sixers more. Just lay it on. Apparently, Zach Lowe reported that the Sixers will seriously entertain signing Kyle Lowry. There will be a real suitor for him this summer. Lowry is from Philadelphia. He played at Villanova. Brian Colangelo, you know, had experience with him in Toronto. So how much should I be dreading the inevitable...
You're so excited
right now. ...4-year, 150 Kyle Lowry max deal?
That is an awful lot of money for a guy who is on the wrong side of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would probably approach Kyle Lowry much as I would with Isaiah Thomas when it comes to re-upping in Boston.
Yeah.
Like, offer 2 years and then max it the hell out
in
those 2 years. Like, that's fine. What I have a problem with is contract length in this climate. Like, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, like, I don't even mind that they got paid $18 million a year if it had been for 2 years.
Right.
Like, it would still have been overpaid, but, you know, you can live with it.
Yeah.
But 4 years is just, you know, handcuffing yourself completely. So you don't want to end up in that situation. If that is what's going to happen, well, then I'm not going to be looking forward to podcasting with you for 4 years.
That is, well, no, I think I'll be more fun because Philly fans are at home when they can gripe about their teams. Like, it's weird when they're successful. Yeah, that's true. So that will just be fuel to my fire for however long that contract is. But I agree with you in principle that it's the length of the deal that upsets me more than the numbers. So if it was a 2-year max deal, I could get on board with that. But yeah, a 4-year max would just be an absolute nightmare. Also, if they're serious about Ben Simmons as a point guard, why are you signing a 31-year-old point guard to a max deal? Like, see how...
Because he's not going to be a point guard. He's going to be a pseudo point guard. We have to stop, like, you know, talking about these guys as legitimate point guards. Like, James Harden is just... He's a shooting guard who plays the role of a point guard. He starts alongside Patrick Beverley, for crying out loud. Patrick Beverley is not a full-time shooting guard. These labels are just so ridiculous. Like, Ben Simmons is going to start at the three, probably.
Right.
And then just handle the basketball.
Yeah.
So you're still going to need, like, two guards
to either
shoot or whatever. So you can easily make this work. This Ben Simmons as a point guard ideology is so flawed because... No, you're just asking him to be a ball-creating three-man. That's fine. Or even a four. Like, at the forward spot. Like a LeBron role.
Right. Well,
that's so, yeah.
Brett Brown has said he wants... He's drawn a line between, like, Giannis and LeBron. And he's like, no, Ben Simmons is, like, our full-time ball handler creator. But to your point, That's offensively, and he has said defensively he is not going to guard.
Exactly. Opposing and you guards. Are who you guard, right?
That's yeah. So they will.
That's how we've determined positions. Like right. You are who you guard.
Yeah. So they will need two smaller guys to go guard opposing point guards, shooting guards, etc. Because Ben Simmons will not be doing that. It's just offensively. And Kyle Lowry is a good defender for now, but again, he's 31 and not getting any younger. So I would much.
He can spot up though.
Yeah, but I would much rather go for like an Avery Bradley or a Patrick Beverley. Go for a guy who is fine playing off the ball. Like, Kyle Lowry hasn't played off the ball for, you know, how many years now? So, I don't see the point of that one. The other name that's been linked to the Sixers so far is J.J. Redick. Adrian Wojnarowski says they'll be one of the biggest suitors for him. According to Broderick Turner of the Los Angeles Times, he's aiming for a deal somewhere in the neighborhood of $18 to $20 million annually. Sarah, what do you think about J.J. Redick to the Sixers?
I'm more interested in what you think about all of these things, but I don't know. I was just thinking, I haven't thought about any of the Clippers in such a long time. That's so sad. But,
that's savage.
He didn't end the season very well, right? He kind of went cold.
Mm-hmm.
So that's of interest to me. But in general, I'm for JJ. Be great to have a shooter there running alongside Simmons. Why not? What do you think there, Brian?
Yeah, I'm more open to JJ than I am to Kyle Lowry for that reason, because you really do need shooters around him, around Simmons and Embiid. Redick is not an all-world defender by any means, but he's not terrible on that end either. He's fine. And next, Robert Covington is the guy we can pin on the top forwards, top wings, top guard, so
until the Spurs steal him away from you, which I can't wait for.
I'm so mad. Why is everyone trying to steal? No one's stealing Robert Covington. Just like,
you do get so angry every time I say that.
I know, because like that was the one. Actual he's the most rage. Processed person that we have on the team aside from Embiid, and I mean arguably even more than Embiid because he was the undrafted free agent. He was the guy who's just on the fringes. So please, everyone, stop trying to steal him and Mort for that. To that point, stop trying to steal Rashawn Holmes. We're keeping both of those guys.
Never. Never. And you know, Robert Covington is like your Turk. He's Turk to your JD.
He really is.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. You could have a lightly used Jahlil Okafor, though. He is more than up for grabs.
No, thank you.
Okay. But yes, I am in on J.J. Redick. I would do, frankly, it's the same thing. It's the contract length. Rather than the value. So, like, I'm good with 2 years, $45 million. I'm good with 3 years, $60 million. If that third year is, a team option or partially guaranteed or something like that, it's just, like, a four-year, $80 million deal that will make me a little nauseous. But, for the next year or two, cap space does not matter for the Sixers. It's not until Simmons, Saric, and whoever they drafted three become eligible for extensions, where we'll really start to run into problems.
JJ's been so great, like sneaky great for the Clippers in 4 years.
Yeah.
Like his per 36 numbers, 19.7 points a game. He's at almost 90 from the line, 44% from downtown, almost 47 from the field in total. Like his scoring game is really at a high level, to the point where we don't really acknowledge it, to the point where we probably should have.
Yeah. I mean, because the Clippers have that big three who take all the attention, but Redick is a huge part of that. And they are, even if they re-sign Blake and CP3, they're probably going to be priced out of keeping Redick too. So that's going to be a big loss for them. Like, I don't see any way the Clippers are as good this year, this coming year, as they were this past year. Because they're
good. I've considered those guys as having a big four, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a huge part of what they do. So, like, again, I'm way more on board with Redick than Kyle Lowry. Because even though, as you pointed out, Mort, that, the Clippers haven't made the conference finals, Redick will still bring playoff experience. He's a veteran voice. I assume he'd be pretty well respected in that locker room and just... again, you just need shooting around Embiid and Simmons. You've got Covington, who can be a streaky shooter, but he's, you know, his form's good. He can be really hot at times. You put Redick there, you get, you know, get someone at the point, or just keep TJ McConnell. Then you have the foundation of a team that at least, you know, I don't know if they're challenging for a playoff spot, but they're going to be pretty good. They'll be in the 35 win range as long as everyone stays healthy. Let's talk about two other things, both involving the Knicks. One, apparently, the Knicks are hoping to rekindle Ricky Rubio trade talks, according to ESPN.com's Ian Begley. It is unclear what they have to actually trade outside of Kristaps Porzingis. The other one is the Wolves are apparently targeting Derrick Rose as a free agent, according to Begley. So, Mort, what do you think about a Rose-Tibbs reunion in Minnesota, and B, assuming they do go that route, would you be more willing to trade Ricky Rubio?
Well, I'm always willing to trade Ricky Rubio because I think even though he had a great year this year compared to previous years, he is a liability when you come to the playoffs, offensively speaking.
Sure.
So Rose is always a risk because of the injuries and the impromptu trips to Chicago, apparently.
Right.
But I get the need. I get the fact that they need to have a guy who can facilitate something at the point guard position and score for himself. And I spoke to people about this, and most said, well, you have Karl Anthony Towns, you have Andrew Wiggins, you have Zach LaVine, that's a lot of scorers. And that's not wrong, but it still puts a cap on your offensive potential in the playoffs, because if you have Ricky Rubio starting, you become predictable, because you know that guy is not going to, you know, hit you with a crossover and get into the paint and kick it off, like, because he doesn't have that ability. So yeah, you need someone. Is that guy Derrick Rose? I would personally say no. But then again, it is Tips.
Right.
You know, there might be some magic between those two that could see Rose return to not MVP level by any means, but pseudo all-star level, maybe, assuming he gets the shots and assuming he gets the responsibility. Not sure, but I would at least look at the possibilities. There is need for change at the point guard spot in Minnesota. And all these names mentioned, like Rose, Rubio, none of those guys are long-term answers at the position. And the question is, to me at least, is Chris Dunn that, you know, solution at the end? Not sure either.
Right.
Like, if you have him on the bench for 2 years and you have him look at Rose and see how he finds holes in the defense, maybe. But I'm not sure. Like, that one position for the T-Wolves is one I'm really nervous about.
Yeah, I think I don't disagree with anything you said there. I mean, Rubio did play really well, especially after the All-Star break. So I think, you know, there was talk after they drafted Dunn, like, you know, 20 games into his rookie season, we're going to trade Rubio and start Dunn. And then Dunn had a much rougher than expected transition to the NBA, to the point as you said, you know, now there are legitimate questions about whether he is the point guard of the future. You know, it takes a while to learn that position, so it's way too early to throw him out entirely. But, yeah, I mean, especially with LaVine recovering from a torn ACL, it does seem like that will be a position of need. So that is something to monitor. Sarah, you told me apparently people are postulating about Rose to the Spurs as well. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, Twitter is a strange place. There's definitely been a lot of people mentioning that. I don't know where it came from at all. As Morton said when we were talking before we started recording, you know, I kind of understand where they're coming from, slightly, but, you know, and the fact that we do have an injured starting point guard and a young guy behind him. But no, I'm not a big fan of that either. Look, if I'm not excited about CP3, I'm definitely not excited about trying to get Derek.
That's a good way to phrase it. Okay, well, we will keep watching for all the free agent rumors bubbling up. I'm sure there will be a lot over the coming weeks. Until then, you've been listening to the NBA Podcast. Again, just a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. Check us out on iTunes, and if you're listening to this on Audio Boom, the iTunes link is at the bottom of our player. On iTunes, we'd love it if you subscribe, download, left some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And then we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter, at FanRag Sports, and for their NBA content, at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
Likewise, Brian.
Thank you, Ryan. And as a parting shot, I'd just like to remind everybody that Kawhi Leonard is still the most efficient scorer of the playoffs. There's a fair chance that we end the finals that way as well. So
there we go. All right. Have a good one, you two.
See ya.